Alina, if you, maybe you can keep. Do we have question here for the three about the three presentations? Yeah.
Ja mam tylko jedną taki komentarz do wystąpienia Moniki, ja też muszę wyjść, więc tak szybko, że uświadomiłaś mi, że ten poemat, ten film Anki został najprawdopodobniej, znaczy uświadomiłaś mi tą relację, bo w latach 70. Jan Styczyński, fotograf, który przyjaźnił się też z Broniewskim, zrobił taką serię zdjęć, która nazywa się właśnie Wisła. Jest to seria, którą dokładnie on idzie biegiem rzeki od Zakopanego, czy tam z gór do morza, pokazując jakby w takich zmiennych cyklach zdjęcia, jakby krajobraz przemysłowy i krajobraz właśnie naturalny, też posiłkując się jakby poematem Broniewskiego. I uświadomiłaś mi to, że no on musiał znać te zamysły, znaczy najprawdopodobniej, chociaż ja nigdy o tym nie czytałam tak wprost, że ten film Anki gdzieś został w tej pamięci, jakby jego przeniesiony pewnie dalej. To są lata 70.
Thank you. Wow. You want to react?
Dziękuję Magdzie za tę wskazówkę. Może właśnie uda się rozbudować wyobrażenie tego filmu o te zdjęcia, także chętnie do tego sięgnę. Dzięki.
You have to.
Tak. O, teraz. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a comment on the paper on Dobrudja and the Lipovans. This is close to my interest, and I would say even to my heart, because I lived in a village of Lipovans, all believers, in Dobrudja, Jurilovka, which was mentioned. And I've studied collectivization. My question was, why on earth the party would like to collectivize a fisherman village? And of course the question is, was the transformation of the village. So my argument was that we deal with a semi-closed ethno-religious community that is opened up by the state through collectivization, nationalization of fishery, and then secularization. Now, if we speak about the question of ethnicity, there are two sides of it. On the one hand, the self-image of the Lipovans and the Tatars concerning their ethnicity. And here there are many dilemmas. I asked the Lipovans what was their relation to the Soviet army, which was stationed in the early 50s in the village in Zhirilovka. And of course, they felt in a way Russian. At the same time, there were some linguistic barriers because they didn't speak the literary Russian of the Russian army, the modern Russian army. And also, there were linguistic barriers because those were Bolsheviks. And so they had affinity toward the Russians, but also some barriers. And that explains why only part of the community went, migrated to Soviet Union. And then I was interested in the memory of this migration. And they would tell to me only the worst of us went there. So there was a kind of anger toward those who left. And I think we find these dilemmas also in the case of the Tatars. Because now they, I mean, even then the inter period, they were assimilated somehow with the Turks, but of course they are not Turks. And even nowadays, I was at the Congress of Tatars in Dobrudja, and they're complaining that Turkey behaves like the mother country and treats the Tatars as Turks. And so there are these dilemmas about their own image of identity. And then there is the tradition how the others see them. And here, I think it would be interesting to mention that there were these painters' colonies in Dobrudja, and in the interwar period as well.
The Baltics,
yeah. And they were actually depicting mostly Turks and Tatars and Lipovans. So it seems to me the socialist realism tapped into this tradition. No, it's not ethnicity per se, but it's this orientalism of depicting the other.
Yes, there is a question of proportion here. as well, because you have, before the 1950s, you have countless images of Turks and Tatars because of this Balchik school. And they were, it was very fashionable to go there and to explore this exotic land in southern Dobruja and depict these people who were very exotic and interesting and different from what was happening in Bucharest and Iași and all that. And after 1950, I could only identify these two images, this lithograph and this sculpture, this plaster, I think it is, this modeled portrait of a little Tatar girl, and they are images of children, which I don't know, maybe says something, because you have Tatar families, you have Tatar men depicted in interwar art, but in socialist realism in the 50s, late 50s, you have only pictures of children, two pictures of children. Whereas before the war, you have generally few representations of Lipovans, but you have exponentially more representation of Lipovans in the 50s, because they were seen as fishermen, as belonging to the working class, as a social professional category, and not as an ethnicity. So there is this change of focus on the on what is more important in these people's identity, their ethnicity, their exoticism, or their what are they doing in terms of work. And for Lipovans, that this must have been a clearer answer. And so you have many depictions of Lipovans in the 50s, whereas for Tatars, they after you have thousands of depictions of Tatars in the 20s and 30s, up to the 40s, they just disappear from the iconography of Romanian art. Thank you for your comment. I was kind of expecting it, and for this research, your article on Constanța, the collectivization in the Constanța region, was very, very helpful. So.
Yeah, and it is great to have this image of countryside, which is not usual countryside. It's another kind of rural activities, and locally it could be essential. And I had a question about the Evelyn Richter and the Lipovian, how the affirmation of this workers in the image. With Evelyn Richter, those were very spectacular with the image of the man who stands in the image, and also this Dada photography by Evelyn Richter. We can read it also as a way of expressing very affirming herself in the image. And I was wondering if there is something to do with mediality, because we have several media, photography, it was more so engravings with in relationship with photography, and you with movie. And I don't know, engravings, this Lipovian and the portrait of the Lipovian, they were not really affirmative in the image. And you said it's a little bit shrewd and shy and things like that. And I was wondering if there's something to do about this, the idea of being in the image and occupy the image.
I think already in the late 50s, these are all images from the late 50s, I think artists had been socialized, they were trained already to know what was expected of them. But analyzing the portraits, there are some 10 portraits of Lipovan fishermen by Naum. This one, the one that I showed and insisted upon as being in line with the rhetoric, with the expected rhetoric, this is more of an exception than the rule. The others could feature easily on the cover of a monograph today. That nobody would think, oh, this is a socialist realist image. They can function very well outside of socialist realism. And I'm not sure that this is the right answer, but my guess was that because they had these images had to be typical. They had to be new, but they had to be typical. They had to be characteristic as well. Because artists had to focus on these characteristics, the new elements kind of slipped away. And they were not wrong, these images. They were exhibited, they were acquired by the state, they were reproduced, so there was nothing wrong with them. But they keep this ambiguity, and even today they can be used without any need to refer to the socialist-realist context.
I just coming back to this staging of the self, this image. I was just staging the self, Selbstinszenierung. It can be read on many different levels. I just read this most obvious level, maybe that Evelyn Richter actually says herself it was her making fun of all these absurd demands as she felt it, but I also looked at it more in terms of a a powerful portrait or image of self-expression, self-determination, giving expression to all sorts of ambitions as a woman, as a photographer, as an agent, a mover. It captures. Sorry? There are machines, the woman, the photographer. I mean, photography is also a technical apparatus. It's quite interesting that a lot of women actually did study photography compared, for instance, to the painting or sculpture. This is also something that is quite interested that it becomes, because photography, in a way, wasn't conceived in the first place as, the fine arts. Was also kind of a niche, so there are a lot of layers or stratas that come together and on which with which she plays, she uses to define herself.
If I can ask again about this this great photography on the woman on the linotype, it is not so usual in the way of showing work, and I was wondering why it is unusual. And I think it is because we see the whole body, and we see the whole body that is doing something, but that is also not so. That is not moving; is doing something just with the hands. And actually, I was disturbed by the feet,
yes.
And reflex of an art historian. I say, where does it feet come from? And for me, it comes from Manet and the woman, the Olympia, and the representation of the feet. There's something like Manet in this.
I never thought about it. I always focus on the feet.
Because Manet is not a woman. And is not very problematic in the representation
of the woman.
I think
it's the punctum or something. Talking when you think about,
It is just about your association with Manet. I have a completely different association. I have another one, because I've already mentioned that to you, with Adolf von Menzel and his image of the forge. No, this steelwork.
Yeah.
It's one of the most famous images. It is 19th century, but it's a socialist realist painting, which is in Nationalgalerie in Berlin.
What is it? A furnace or something?
Weissenberg. And there is also this unprotected foot. This is my punctum. I constantly look at this painting and I'm thinking, my goodness, all those people working in this terribly hot, dangerous area, and they don't have proper shoes, and they have those unprotected parts of their feet. And I was just thinking that it is another Menzel.
Yeah, it's the body comes in a way through that very flesh, this feet in a way.
If I can defend my association with Manet, that's the movement of the feet, they are cross, I don't know, exactly. And she has shoes, she's not bare feet. She has shoes that are a little bit like the shoes of the Olympia.
I would just like to add a small comment, because when you were analyzing the photo, I was struck by the fact that you said that the machine kind of takes control.
No, she takes control.
Yeah, if you concentrate on the feet, this is where you kind of come to the conclusion that she's so relaxed. Okay, this is like if she was just, you know, doing something for fun, and it is her who takes control and not the machine.
Yeah, I think it's both ways, isn't it? But you, of course, at first it's this. I'm totally agree. That's what I first think. It's this totally self-effacing naturalness, as if she was doing this. Well, just on this side, and then I think all these different levels. But they are more conceptual. I don't know. They set in this fusion. I started reading all these all these discourses can be read in it if you want, and then it ends again with the feet. So yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah.
Other question, comments? We are all tired. So thank you again to your three presentations.